Welcome to TMZ Live. Harvey Levin here.
Charles here.
So we have some really interesting news you haven't heard before about O.J. Simpson. You know he died last week, and he died with a judgment of more than $100 million. That's what it's ballooned to. For the deaths of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson.
That was the judgment that came in 1997 after the civil trial.
That's right.
It was, at that point, $33 million, but it said, with interest.
So yeah. O.J.'s longtime lawyer said right after O.J. died that Fred Goldman wasn't going to get a penny of whatever was left. He has changed his tune.
Yes, and now he's saying that Fred Goldman is welcome to be a creditor, to put in a claim.
And he'll accept it.
And he'll accept it and deal with it under Nevada law.
Which, I got to say, as somebody who covered this case, I am shocked at this. So we are honored to have this now executor on our show.
Malcolm Laverne, welcome to TMZ Live.
Hi, Malcolm.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. So your statement that Fred can file this claim, is that kind of an open door that you will negotiate with him? Some kind of resolution?
I'm obligated to as an executor, and I don't want to get into the legalese of it, but I know from litigating with Fred Goldman through lawsuits he's filed against OJ in the past here in Nevada that he has a valid claim. So that's not the issue anymore. That is a valid claim, and it will be accepted into the estate.
So that's a big statement. So you're now acknowledging that he is a creditor based on the civil judgment. And that he is now in line to get some amount of money from this estate?
That's accurate. He is a claimant. I haven't reached out to his representatives formally. Ron's mom, Sharon Rufo's representative, has reached out to me. But frankly, I've been so busy trying to keep my head above water, I haven't been able to prepare a formal response to them. So before even the deadlines are over, so there's deadlines to file claims. There's all these little technical legalese things going on. Within the next few weeks, I will invite Fred Goldman, Sharon Rufo, and the Brown family to show them my homework, because I've hit the ground running since Thursday evening when I found out I was the executor from A to Z with the entirety of control over Mr. Simpson's estate. So I've hit the ground running. I've been doing a lot of things, and I'm going to invite them in before that time to show them what's there and show them what I've done.
So, Malcolm, the immediate question a lot of people asked is, how much money is there? You know, like we said, the judgment is now ballooned to $100 million, over $100 million. Look, we don't know O.J.'s finances. It's a mystery. We know what he was getting from his NFL pension, roughly.
And SAG.
And SAG pensions, roughly. And the number that we'd heard is around $400,000
a year.
A year. But I guess what Fred Goldman is asking is, how much money is there? How much of this can we actually get?
As far as his annual yearly income from those pensions and from the maximum amount of Social Security that he was getting, it's a little inflated. The media reports are inflated, but I do have tax returns in my possession. Mr. Simpson was living well. It was not $400,000 a year, but Mr. Simpson was living well on the steady income that he had. So that's one part of this. The second part of this is that when I bring them in, I will go over these statements with them. I was able to locate an accurate amount from a Nevada bank account that he has here, so I know the exact amount in that one. I was aware of a Florida bank account that he had. I don't know the name of the bank. I don't know how much is in it, so that is a mystery to me now as well. And then I've also recently identified some funds, for whatever reason, that were being held in another lawyer's account. Everyone knows, Fred and OJ were litigating for 30 years now, or coming in close to 30 years now. And when Mr. Simpson lived in Florida, they were fighting over some money, and that money was just being held in an attorney account. So I've identified that as a source of funds as well.
So I don't want to get too legal here, but my understanding is that OJ had a revocable trust, which means he could take it back if he wanted to, but upon death, it became irrevocable, which means that the money would then automatically go to whoever his beneficiaries are, presumably his children. Is it your understanding that the money we're talking about does not include what was in that trust that automatically goes to the kids upon OJ's death.
Oh boy, you've got to. Estate planning law is almost like me saying I'm not a lawyer, okay? Because it is highly specialized.
I had to do research on this yesterday, by the way.
It is, and you're an attorney, and so you know that. You know that it is highly specialized, Harvey. So it is, but I will tell you something. If he had done an irrevocable trust in his lifetime and basically had and said, look, I have no control over it anymore, that's one grounds. It was a revocable trust while he was alive, but now that he's dead, let me cut to the chase with your audience. Whatever the status of that trust is, whether it was irrevocable or revocable, that doesn't stop a claimant like Fred Goldman or any of the other claimants from coming in and challenging that trust. It just doesn't. So that we can put that aside right now. The fact is, there's a trust. There's assets in the that have been assigned to the trust. And that's now part of the estate. So that's just something that I'm going to just say, look, I think it's slightly irrelevant at this point.
But I think what you said is highly relevant just now. I have to tell you, as somebody who covered this for 30 years, I am stunned at how transparent you are right now and how different what you're saying is from what O.J. Simpson said during his lifetime, because he would do anything to keep from paying Fred Goldman. And you sound more than receptive right now. Am I reading this right?
You got to remember, I was Mr. Simpson's attorney for 15 years, first on some of his camp issues, AKA prison, and then out of prison dealing with issues, including Mr. Goldman's efforts to collect on that judgment here in Nevada. So I was part of Team Simpson with that attorney hat on, using the laws, if I could, to make sure that Mr. Simpson was protected as a debtor. But the attorney hat now has come off, all right? And the executor hat has come on. Two different rules, two different roles. So I have to get used to that learning curve. I've never been the executor of an estate, so yes. And because of the case and the publicity that's on it, I think that hyper-transparency is warranted here. So yes, you're right.
So wow. I got to tell you, it's stunning to me what you just said.
Well, to your point, Harvey, when attorney Malcolm was dealing with Fred Goldman, as you said, you were trying to protect OJ's assets as a debtor. But I guess what is the relationship between attorney Malcolm and Fred Goldman? Because I would understand why Fred Goldman, if it was contentious, I would understand why Fred Goldman's reaction and his attorney's reaction was immediately that there was going to have to be a fight to get the money, but executor Malcolm seems more open to it.
Well, let me clarify something for you as well. Fred Goldman has not made any post-OJ death remarks that I found offensive. I think they were fine given the circumstances of his son's loss and his grieving. I looked at his direct remarks. When I went back and analyzed it, Fred Goldman has said nothing offensive. It was his attorney, his California debt collection attorney, that was mouthing off at the time. And so my statements were in response to that. So that's basically it. But as far as the attorney-client Malcolm Laverne, O.J. Simpson relationship against the Goldmans, it was highly adversarial. And there was a lot of hyperbole on both sides, really. Okay. But now it's time to just tone down the rhetoric on both sides. I'm an executor. Fred Goldman's a claimant. There are rules for an estate that govern that don't apply in highly litigious matters. Fred Goldman's claim is going to be in there. It's going to be accepted. I'm going to bring him in advance, or at least the invitation. Sharon Rupo's representative has already reached out to me, and they want to do something. I'll see who's representing the Brown estate at this point and see if that claim is valid. So they're going to come in and see my homework, is what I'm basically saying.
Final question. Are we talking millions right now in terms of what OJ left?
Not from what I've done. And I'll give you a little idea of my homework. There's a Florida bank account that Simpson has. I don't know. That's undetermined. I have the exact dollar amount of his Nevada account with me, and it's less than five figures.
I got to say, I like talking to Malcolm the executor more than Malcolm the lawyer. You are so incredibly transparent.
More forthcoming, definitely.
This was great. We really appreciate the time. You really gave us a lot.
Been a pleasure, and we can do follow-ups. Let me keep doing my homework. been quite a daunting task. I'm trying to keep my head above water.
Hey, Malcolm, I was an executor once or twice. It sucks, so good luck.
Thank you very much, Harvey. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Good talking to you. Wow. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
Completely different tone than expected.
Totally. Oh, my gosh.
We have talked about it for the last couple of years, really, that Taylor Swift and Beyoncé's fan bases are
rabid,
and protect them at all costs.
And people, if you want to go after either of these two women, you do so at your own risk.
There is someone who doesn't really care, apparently, what Swifties or the Beehive think, because she is speaking her mind about both of those artists, and that person is Courtney Love.
An accomplished musician herself.
A very accomplished musician who is also known to be outspoken. But like we said, it is strange to hear someone be this outspoken about those two artists.
Just wait, watch this.
So this is what Courtney Love told The Standard about Taylor Swift. She said, Taylor is not important. She might be a safe space for girls, and she's probably the Madonna of now, but she's not interesting as an artist.
I think what she's saying, I mean, look.
She's saying there are good things about her.
I think what she's saying, too, is that in terms of important, there was revolutionary music back in the day.
Right.
I don't think people would say Taylor's music is revolutionary, like the Beatles. Arguably, Kurt Cobain.
I think it's...
And Hole.
Sure. Okay.
I think that's where she's coming from.
Got it. And that may be, I guess, but I would say, I would counter, if I were Swiftie and defending Taylor, I would say, but she's important in the numbers.
Of course.
That she is numbers of fans that she brings out to stadiums and the numbers of fans who buy her music. So that's important also.
Well, that kind of says it all right there in the picture. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many times Hole played to a stadium like that.
Well, that's the thing. Success and being revolutionary and being good are not always the same thing. Elton John, I would argue, didn't revolutionize music, but he's incredibly talented and makes great music and was very popular. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time to be a great artist.
Right.
Yeah, but I think Elton... Eric, I think
I knew Elton you were going to defend this.
I think Elton John was kind of revolutionary in a way.
He wrote pop songs on a piano. He was not the first person to do that.
Well, even Bernie Taupin did that.
Well, he wrote the lyrics.
Elton wrote the music. That's not a knock on Elton John, but like, no, he wasn't this visionary experimental. David Bowie was a much weirder, more experimental artist, but he wasn't as commercially successful in the U.S., so.
Right.
Yeah, okay, there's room for all kinds of people.
Courtney's not done.
Yes, because then she had a few things to say about Beyoncé as well. She said, I like the idea of Beyoncé doing a country record because it's about black women going into spaces where previously only white women have been allowed. As a concept, I love it. I just don't like her music. And now that I really look at both of these statements are the same thing. She just doesn't like either of their music. She doesn't like Taylor's music. She doesn't like Beyoncé's music. She acknowledges that there are positive things that they are bringing to their fan bases and even to the music industry, but she doesn't care about their music.
It's a little bit of old woman yells at cloud, a little bit.
Yeah.
But also, Courtney Love's one of the few people, she's built a career out of burning bridges. Like, from the beginning, that's what she's done. She's been making people angry since the early 90s, and somehow she sustained that. Making people angry is sort of her bread and butter.
By the way, and the shot at Madonna, there was a little shot at Madonna in there also.
I think so, too. I mean, I didn't know how to receive that, because is she saying that Madonna is...
She's saying Madonna wasn't important either.
Essentially, she seems to be saying that.
Yeah, she's very popular. And lots of people go to see her, but who cares about her?
Eric, do you think part of this is Kurt Cobain, who was really revolutionary, and that's kind of where she's coming from?
Well, yeah, she came up from that 90s, you know, the Seattle, the punk scene that then became grunge, and these were artists that didn't care about being commercially successful and were trying new things. And so that's sort of where her mindset has always been. So when she sees a big pop star, you know, she had beef with Gwen Stefani back in the day, too. Any mainstream pop female artist kind of just rubs her the wrong way.
Nikki Coleman from Mesa, Arizona. So as far as Taylor Swift being uninteresting, I don't think you need to say Taylor reinvents the wheel with music. Quite literally, the magic of Taylor Swift is that she's able to articulate and put into words the mundane and seemingly uninteresting things that so many people, particularly women, go through and experience, and she finds a way to put that into music. And to me, that takes immense talent.
So in other words, she's the Seinfeld of music.
Sure.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got the reference because you're kind of young, so I didn't know if you would know.
I get it.
Okay, I got you. Okay.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
Listen,
songs about nothing?
Well, but he made it into a huge thing.
I know.
So credit to Taylor Swift, too. Okay, we're moving on.
Yes, to some really, really harsh words for Jeff Bezos, and more specifically, Jeff Bezos' fiance, Lauren Sanchez. And it comes from a guy who you'll remember got into a big feud with James Corden. Keith McNally owns a restaurant in New York called Balthazar, and just for what, I don't know where this came from, why he decided to do it, maybe he's just trolling.
He is trolling.
But he said this.
Remember, before you get into it, he trolled endlessly on the James Corden thing.
He went back and forth with him, and it was ridiculous. So, out of nowhere, he says, does anybody else find Jeff Bezos' new wife, fiance, Lauren Sanchez, absolutely revolting? What an ugly and blank, smug-looking couple they make. Is this what having $1,000 billion does to people?
God, why would he do, first of all, it's so offensive. It's really so offensive to do that.
You literally just looked at a woman and decided you don't like her looks, and so you're going to say something disgusting. And I have to say in full disclosure here, I know Lauren. We used to work together. We were friends. Even if I didn't know her, I would just go, why are you saying this?
Right.
Dude? Like, just
it's really
let
awful.
It. I don't know where it came from, but
she got a defender.
Yes, because Chrissy Teigen very quickly commented on his post and said she's actually incredibly dynamic, accomplished, and kind, and everyone who knows her would say the same.
What's fascinating is that it's Chrissy Teigen, who was once dragged for being an online bully, coming to the defense of someone who is being bullied online. I found that quite interesting. I will say the ugly comment is beyond the pale, but smug. They do look a little smug to me.
Is that such a nasty comment? because they're billionaires. That's what you're looking at.
I'm judging their faces, and the faces look a little smug.
I'm sorry, what billionaire don't you think is smug?
Right, Eric? That's a good question.
That's fair. If you have $1 billion, smug just wears pretty well.
To you.
Can't take it off.
To you, but that doesn't mean they're smug. I mean, it's just not, it's such a trolly thing to say, and just, it's really awful. Although, I bet Chrissy gets invited in the yacht now.
I think she, I'm trying to think if she's been on the yacht, but yeah.
But she's going this summer.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's DJ Chain, St. Pete, Florida. For one, personally, I think it's highly disrespectful for anybody to give any type of a comment on somebody else's wife. Shout out to Chrissy for coming up to back her up, and shout out to Lauren for, you know, being beautiful and being married to the richest man in the world.
I don't know.
He wants an invite to the yacht, too.
And shout out to the Mediterranean where she's going to be sailing.
We got to stop calling it a yacht. Caitlin Clark went number one in the WNBA draft. She's now...
As expected.
She is a member of the Indiana Fever. And big celebration for her last night. Until the fans found out how much she's going to be making.
Which, by the way, everybody knew. There's a pay schedule.
But and then this is part of the phenomenon of Caitlin Clark. Even people who were WNBA fans probably didn't think anything about what the players were being paid. But now you have millions of new fans who are coming to it, and they're realizing, wait a second, that's all that they make. Her rookie contract is for $338,000, and that's over 4 years.
So it's around, what, 75 grand a year?
Averaging about 75, a little over 75.
So basically, Caitlin's looking for a roommate right now in Indiana.
Well, in Indiana, I think that'll go a little further. And we should say she is going to make
millions.
Much more than that because of endorsements. She was already making a lot of money through endorsements just in college. So. Right. She's gonna be okay.
I was kidding.
Yeah, she's gonna be okay. Nobody's saying that. Yeah, Caitlin Clark's.
But
gonna
it puts
be
a, it puts a spotlight
on the fact
on the
that,
fact that women make very little relative, certainly, to what men are making.
And
in,
especially
in
when
basketball.
You've heard all the these huge numbers over the last month,
ratings, and
jersey sales
bigger than the jersey sales are just going insane.
So it's like, where's the money?
Yeah, look, and I will say this. The reason that, at least right now, that the men make so much more, you've got NBA players right now making $60 million a season in the NBA. it's because there is not even a comparison to be made between the ratings, between the attendance of the men versus the women's game. But I think Caitlin Clark has a big opportunity here to change that, and she already has. I mean, it's undeniable. First of all, 18 million people, 4 million people more than the men's game watched the women's NCAA tournament final. So that's incredible. That rating was more than any NBA game, more than any Major League Baseball game last season. So it's incredible the star power that she already has. If she can carry that into the NBA, these are not going to be the salaries for very long because there are going to be more eyeballs, there's going to be more advertising.
Well, not just that, Babcock, there's also going to be TV licensing deals where all of a sudden the WNBA is going to say, hey, we were making X, we now want 5X.
Oh, Harvey, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think you're not talking about a 10% raise. I think you're talking about an exponential increase in what they're making now. If they're making $75,000, I think you're going to be seeing salaries in the millions of dollars, if not more. The question I have is, can she continue this? Look, 17,000 people went to their arena in Indiana last night to watch a TV show. That's unheard of. Right. Not even in the NBA does that happen.
So all that money does go up as long as the viewers come to TV and people actually go to the arena.
And it's exciting.
And sell out the arena.
And it's exciting.
Right.
And if it's exciting and if she keeps doing what she's doing, she's not going to lose the audience.
But the pay doesn't seem to matter as much to her. I know to us it's like that is outrageous, you know, whatever. But remember, she turned down $5 million for the Big Three because she does want to make a splash in the WNBA. And kind of like Babcock said, she is really raising more awareness. She's getting more eyeballs on the WNBA, which can only help them in the long run. But just in general, with people learning what her actual income is going to be, being the best in the world, I mean, it is really shocking. And even people like Russell Wilson have come out and said, like, you know, I pray for the day when women can make more than this.
Well, it takes, you know, it takes like a Billie Jean King or somebody like that to change the game. Caitlin is the one that's changing the game, not just in basketball. She may be changing the game in women's sports.
Women's sports in general,
yeah. I mean, this is a huge, huge deal.
Hey, I'm Amy from Katy, Texas, and I agree with you guys. The numbers she's pulling and the ratings and the attendance that she's having and that huge shift from men's basketball to women's basketball, I think it will carry over into the dollar signs. I don't think she's worried about that right now, but it has to follow. I mean, it's pretty obvious that that's what's happening. Even the practice games of her LSU, their first practice was completely sold out. That doesn't even happen for the guys.
It's crazy. Right. That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Okay, we got to take a break.
Mystery about Riley Strain is just getting deeper here. Even though the police said that they have found no obvious sign of foul play when his body was pulled out of the river there in Tennessee.
This is, remember, he was at Luke Bryan's bar with his fraternity brothers. He left the bar out of it, and 2 weeks later they found him in the river.
So the police did an autopsy, and they said that there was no obvious sign of foul play. Family has not believed that. They have ordered another autopsy, and now his mother and father are speaking out. They sat down with News Nation, and listen to this. His mom said something about the night that he was at the bar. They had some communication. They were texting, and he was texting about feeling like something might have been put in his drink.
He had sent me a text and said that he had ordered he was drinking a rum and coke and it didn't taste good. And I said, well, you probably shouldn't drink it then. He goes, well, it tastes like barbecue. And I go, well, that sounds awful. And he said, well, it sounds good, but it's not.
Do you think that could have something to do with what happened?
Yeah, maybe there was something in it. That shouldn't have been.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. He had, according to police, the bar tab at Luke Bryan's bar, he had one drink and two waters. Now, look at this video of him leaving the bar.
He was stumbling.
He was kicked out of the bar. The bar has been radio silent on why, but he is clearly out of it. I can also tell you that roofing is a problem in Nashville. Now, I'm not saying that he was roofied, but it's possible, and there have been problems at downtown bars there where this has happened, but he is
certainly
totally
possible.
Out of it.
We should say, but the other possibility is that he had a lot to drink before he got to the bar.
It's possible.
But you're right, but him saying that he tasted something different.
And you know what's really interesting about it is that He was texting his mom. If somebody is that out of it, do you know what I mean? They wouldn't be.
That struck me as, I don't know, I've never texted a parent from the bar going
but
like,
younger,
hey, my drink.
But he's much younger. What
sure.
I'm saying is.
Even when I was that age.
But if he's doing it, he can't be that out of it if he's having a conversation.
At that point.
At that
not,
point.
We don't, you know, that was interesting. I don't, was he still in the bar when he sent that text?
Oh, by the time he was out,
he must have been.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. First of all, the bar hasn't been radio silent on why they kicked him out. They said very clearly he was violating our codes of conduct, basically acting a fool. That's why they kicked him out.
But what did he do? That's what I'm saying.
The specifics of what exactly he did, I don't know. Yeah. They have the surveillance video. I'm sure if they wanted to release it, they would. But I think to both your points, yes, it's possible he was roofied. And to Charles's point, it's also possible he came in there smashed ahead of time. And I think that's realistically what actually happened. I know the family's grieving. They want answers, but we've got to stop feeding these conspiracy theories. I think the guy he got wasted and his friends let him run into the streets. And that's who they really need to take if they have a bone to pick, take it up with his friends. And in fact, this News Nation interview that's going to air later tonight, the reporter teased the fact that the mom is angry/disappointed with the frat brothers who let him just wander off into the night. And that's really who
she should
the finger should be pointed at in this instance. In my
she
opinion.
Should be. I want to say something else. That bar has not released the video of him inside the bar, at least the last I looked, which was last week.
Well, I was going to say, if someone had put something in his drink, that should be apparent on video.
Or how he was acting in the bar, how he acted before and after he took the drink.
They released it to the people that actually needed it, which were the police. The police have seen that video, and they said there's no there. So, yeah, if the parents want some peace, I guess you can give it to them. But it's
police didn't say that. They didn't say that the video.
Harvey, they investigated this whole case.
No, the police have not said what he was doing in the bar that caused him to get kicked out and when he started getting crazy, because that really matters here. The other thing is that Riley Strain ends up in this river with his pants off.
Wallet.
And he had been wearing boots. There was a credit boots card off on the riverbank. So there are a lot of questions about this case.
Hi, this is Sylvia from Dallas, and I'm sure that Riley's parents want some closure. So I do hope they make the video available to them so that they can get some closure on what really did happen, because it does seem a little bit suspicious.
I agree. Okay, we're going
to
move on.
Yes, to Ted Lasso star Hannah Waddingham, who was hosting an award show over in England, the Olivier Awards. It's for theater. She's a big theater star. And so as she was walking in, she stopped to do some photos, as celebs are wont to do. But she ended up getting into a little dispute with one of the photographers who had a really, I don't want to say creepy demand, or request of her. Listen to how Hannah responded to him.
I'm kind of torn between this clip because, like you said, Charles, it was a kind of creepy request. However, the dress that she was wearing did have a slit in it. So when it's not a hard, like it's not a weird thing to ask someone when you have an outfit choice like this. Anytime you buy a dress online, anytime you see someone on the red carpet, they have a slit in their dress. The model online when you buy the dress is you put your leg through the slit. That is the sexy appeal of the dress.
But that's your choice, isn't it?
I agree with you, but I think, Nikki, correct me if I'm wrong here, that a lot of women on red carpets do pose with their legs showing. And so you got this.
But that's their.
Again, it's a professional photographer, and he shouldn't have said it. But he's used to that drill.
If she wanted to show legs, she would have shown it.
I get it.
Right? It's just a weird thing to request of someone.
I am not dying on this hill. Right. We're taking a break.
All right. When we come back, here's a hill for you to die on. Beauty pageants. There is a new one, and this one is genuinely about beauty because it's AI contestants, an AI beauty pageant.
That's not a real person.
How in the world does this work?
It's not a real person.
How much money is on the line here?
Not real.
Stop ruining it for everyone. Definitely not real. We're going to be joined by a pageant veteran herself. Claudia Jordan is going to be here to give us her opinion about these new phenomenon, AI beauty pageants. You know, for a while there was a movement to get away from beauty pageants, and actually they don't call them beauty pageants anymore, they're just pageants. But there is a new one now that I think...
It's a beauty pageant.
...is going to confound. This one is nothing but a beauty pageant.
Nothing but.
Because all of the contestants are...
Not real.
AI. They are digital creations, and you can enter this. It actually...
What you're looking at, these are not people. These are AI-generated
yes,
images.
Yes, and they're people who have created them, though, who will enter this
there
contest.
There is a similarity with all of them, but
what
anyway.
What is it? Is it brown hair?
So anyway, there's actually a pageant where all of these creators yeah. are coming up with these images. By the way,
if you are a digital creator, you can enter this pageant
right.
now. And the finals will be next month. They haven't really figured out exactly how this is going to happen and how people can watch it, if you can. But there is cash on the table here, $13,000 for first place. So what do real pageant people think about this?
Yeah.
We are fortunate to have one with us. One of our favorite people. We've spoken to her several times. Claudia Jordan, of course, who is a veteran of pageants, also has been on reality shows.
Deal, No Deal, Real Housewives,
and she is joining us right now. Claudia, welcome back to TMZ Live.
Hey, Claudia.
I miss you guys catching me coming out of clubs, stumbling back
into the people. I know, you left LA, and now we don't get that anymore. But
I'll be there tomorrow, so maybe I'll tip y'all off.
All right.
So what say you about not just these AI-generated images that become part of a pageant, but also getting back to the core of what pageants used to be, which is
just what
beauty.
Does someone look like?
Yeah.
I don't mind a beauty pageant. I don't think that I get that we're so woke now that everything's offensive and we have to like just water everything down. But I do not like this AI thing. I'm actually quite sick of it. It's hard enough being a woman in you know, in the society the way it is and the scrutiny that we already get. Now we have AI hiring the standard of beauty where they're just so perfect. And I just feel like it's just another category where they're taking real women out of things, like real living, breathing women. Now we're being replaced by these AI characters. It is a nerd's dream. This is good for the nerds that don't really talk to women. But I don't think it's a good thing. I don't, because what is it? I feel like it's a slippery slope. I really do.
It's not even about the contestants. I mean, the contestants are the artists who are creating this, right? And so you're making a creation and someone's going to judge your art. It's almost like an art show.
It is an art show. That's exactly what it is.
It's not really a beauty pageant.
That's exactly what it is.
Maybe as a one-time thing, I could see it like, oh, okay, that was beautiful, an art show. But I just worry about what comes next. Will they eventually replace, you know, real beauty pageants? I don't know. I just feel like we're just getting further and further away from reality and more into this virtual world, which some people may like it. I'm an old school girl. I kind of like human interaction and seeing, I think it's when you see a beautiful, real life human being, I think there's nothing better than that. So yeah, you can make these perfect creations and they're good for the, it's fun for the artist and like a one-time thing, but I just don't want this to be replacing what we, you know what I mean?
Can I give you my take on this? Because
yes.
I'm dying to know what you think of this because you kind of led me down this path. I think this, what you're looking at with these AI models and these, you know, beauty pageants, this is the beginning of something that I know is gonna happen. Do you see the movie Her, where Joaquin mm-hmm. Phoenix has a relationship with essentially an AI model or a voice? I think that's gonna happen. People are already not socializing because of social media. And when they have these images right. before them, they're going to then
now
have
it's not
person-
be just the voice.
They're going to have personalities.
Right. You're going to have an actual hologram.
And people are going to have, people are going to relationships with these AI people. So that's the world we're going to be living in, Claudia.
Harvey, I totally agree with you. We've already, okay, when you go, have you been in a sex toy shop recently, Harvey?
No.
Did I see you in one recently?
Nope.
Oh, that wasn't you. Okay. Maybe that was AI Harvey. But anyways.
I'm glad you didn't ask me.
Oh, I already know you, Charles. So the way things are already, like, we're already just like being like, just, diminished to like, you can buy a pocket now, right? Now, on top of that, like we're just getting further and further away of interpersonal relationships, real life relationships, people. And I get what you're saying, Harvey. We already have some people that have full on relationships married to sex dolls, sex toys. Like, what are right. we doing? I just want to get away from that. I agree with you. I feel like we're going down a slippery slope. That won't be so slippery because it's virtual.
Claudia, stay out of that shop.
I don't like it. I don't like it. And I think about this. When we see Photoshopped images in a magazine, that's already enough to make real women insecure or just like give an unrealistic standard of beauty. Like, wow, this girl's so perfect. Now we have AI creations to make us feel even less adequate than we already may feel. Because these women, look at them. They are they are beautiful.
Claudia, we said that exactly when we first showed them. And Harvey said, he's like, they all have something in common.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're making a specific body type for all of them because that's what's going to grab the eyes of the judges. But I get your point. For if you're a woman online, you're looking at that, it's unrealistic.
We never have this type of stuff for men. Like, where's the AI fine man out there to make you guys feel a way? And then maybe you'll feel our pain because I don't really ever see that. It's always us.
No, we know.
Believe me.
You get to a certain age, you don't need AI to tell you that.
Something happened to me yesterday, Claudia, that I'm not even going to get into. I told him that my ego is so deflated.
Someone just called him out for having a lot of wisdom.
Older than dirt.
Really?
A total stranger, by the way.
At a stoplight, Claudia.
So you don't need AI necessarily.
A stranger looked at me and said, oh my God, you look 15 years older in person.
I thought you weren't going to get into it.
Well, I think.
Harvey, I don't believe that. I think you actually look good. I actually think you look better as you got older. So I don't believe that. I think not that I don't believe that. I'm saying that's mean.
Now but I really miss you.
Yeah.
You have these unrealistic standards to just make you feel even older. You know?
Yeah.
We love talking to you. Miss you, Claudia. Seriously.
I would love to come back to LA. I'm sit in with you guys. So we can
come
really
on in anytime.
Open invitation.
Anytime.
Thanks, Claudia.
Okay, now.
All right.
Bye,
thanks, Claudia. We'll see you.
Johnny Depp doing a little house hunting while he's working. He's over in Italy shooting a movie, and someone turned him on to an available property. Now,
this is what you call disposable income.
Yeah, you know?
I like that castle. How much?
How much for that condo? I mean, castle. That is the castle that he was touring.
Oh, my God. Look at that.
$4 million. I don't know how much land it comes with, but I'd imagine.
By the way,
you get the hill that it's on.
In LA, $50 million.
Well, it's 11 bedrooms and 13 bathrooms, so definitely sounds like a castle. The surprising thing is that while I'm sure a lot of people would be excited to have Johnny Depp move into town, it sounds like these townspeople are not happy about it at all. In fact, the mayor spoke to another news outlet explaining that this castle is of community interest, and they feel like Johnny Depp might come in and maybe not follow the rules, kind of do whatever he wants.
Why would he say that? Just because he's a movie star?
Because they might want to redo the place. They might want to tarnish it. I mean, clearly this is a place that has been around for a very long time. It sits on the top of the hill of a town of only 3,000 people in it. It's, I'm sure, a cherished part of the community. You don't just want some Hollywood star waltzing and doing whatever they want.
Well,
why not?
I can see that from the townspeople.
Because there's,
what do you mean, why not?
Why not?
It's a small town in northern Italy. Well, they don't want all this celebrity Hollywood nonsense.
And also,
you gotta blow out the kitchen.
Let's be real here. This is an ego purchase, okay? This is not practical living. There's no one who's moving to the middle of nowhere Italy to just live in
how
this massive
dare
castle.
You, sir.
So
nowhere
this is just
Italy.
So he could flex to his Hollywood friends and go, oh, why don't you check out my castle? It's in Italy.
I'm Jerry Chen. I'm from Taipei, Taiwan. Personally, I think it's a bad idea for Johnny to purchase land there. Like, I don't know, he could bring a lot of fans over there and that could wreck the town. You know, it could be good for business but for a while, but then they'll do some crazy and also he may also pull some big parties and possibly sex parties, you know?
Oh, my God.
All right, wow. Well, you already painted a whole picture. You're not helping him with the mayor.
Wow. What else do you guys want to talk about?
My name is Chloe from Pittsburgh, and I want to talk about Courtney Love and her comments with Beyonce and Taylor Swift. The person that dictates if important music is important is the person being affected by the music. I would say Courtney should try to focus on being a little bit more positive because her being a disgruntled rocker is the only thing cliche about this. You don't always have to be a peach cobbler, but you could not also have to be used coffee grounds.
Ooh.
Wow.
Wow.
Boy,
wow.
Drake could use you.
Woo! Yeah, no kidding. You want to do a little ghostwriting for Drake?
One more.
This is Kim in St. Louis on Chrissy Teigen defending Lauren Sanchez. And kudos to Chrissy for speaking out. What's the point of being rude to people who are just minding their business, which has nothing to do with their money? Kindness is key and much needed by all.
Can't argue with it.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely right.
You know, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift's PDA kind of stole the spotlight at Coachella this weekend. There was another couple there. And actually, we had seen some video of Justin and Hailey Bieber.
But kind of weird video.
Near Travis and Taylor when they were walking out. But so he and Hailey were walking a few feet apart.
Yeah.
Which some people took as like, oh, see, the rumors are right.
There were rumors that they were having trouble in the marriage and walking out that far apart. People were saying, oh, that proves it.
Well, there were other images of them. Every picture tells a story. That one you thought told a story. Here's another one.
Which is a more real one. This wasn't obviously taken by them. It was taken by a fan.
Exactly. So, and they didn't necessarily know that that person was recording. So, yeah, this is them just being real.
Justin actually reposted the fan who posted that initially. But it really does show. It's a candid moment.
Yes.
So
very tender, very affectionate.
So will it put the rumors to rest? Do you know social media?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'll just be a different rumor.
Of course. Okay, we will see you tomorrow.